Hear the extraordinary secrets of how to thrive in a disrupted world.
The old rules of management are not really correct anymore.
So what works?
Making a wise pivot.
Pivot to the future with Will.i.am and Omar Abbosh. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's your money briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen at the Wall Street Journal in New York. Private equity firms have been growing their funds by leaps and bounds. We'll explain in a moment why the return on investing in those funds has been more like a skip and a jump. First, these money and market stories you should know. Looks like those bonuses that companies handed out in response to the 2017 GOP tax cut appear to have been temporary. The Labor Department says what they classify as non-production bonuses fell 24% in the first quarter of 2019 as compared to a year earlier. That's the largest decrease for the category of benefit costs on record back to 2005. But there are some perks that help to balance things out. Private sector employer spending on vacation and other paid time off benefits rose 3.3% in the first quarter from a year ago, and that outpaces the increase in wages. And retirement and other savings benefits rose 2.3% from a year earlier. And a report from GivingUSA says that individual donations to charity fell by 1.1% last year, from $295 billion down to $292 billion. It ended a four-year streak of increases, and it was the largest decline since a 6.1% drop in 2009. And here you can blame the IRS in part. With its federal tax policy change that doubled the standard deduction, more than 45 million households itemized their deductions in 2016, and that most likely reduced the incentive for charitable giving. GivingUSA says that donations were up for nonprofits involved in international affairs and environmental or animal welfare issues, but donations to foundations were down, as was giving to education, to religion, and to public society benefit organizations. Those are groups which work on issues like voter education, civil rights, civil liberties, and consumer rights.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why they've created Eno, the Capital One assistant that catches things that might look wrong with your credit card. Eno catches over-tipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, and then sends an alert to your phone and helps you fix it. It's another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Here's an example of bigger not necessarily being better. Private equity firms are raising funds to the point where they're classified as mega funds, but are the funds' investments showing mega returns? Let's bring in Wall Street Journal private equity reporter Miriam Gottfried to sort it out for us. So Miriam, what's the size of private equity funds we're talking about from a general sense where they would be referred to as a mega fund?
Well, of course, in this industry, everybody has their own definition of what constitutes mega. But in the story that I wrote and with the data that I used, which was from Cambridge Associates, we use a definition of $10 billion or more.
Okay. And what is the demand here that private equity firms are answering in creating these large funds?
That's a great question. Basically, there are large institutions such as sovereign wealth funds and pension funds out there that are trying to earn a return in a very low interest rate environment. So they will go anywhere to get some kind of yield. And they have hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars to put to work. And they need a place where they can park a lot of it all at once. And so that's why these incredibly large funds have sprung up to absorb that capital.
And these are some well-known funds you outline in your story that are of this level.
In order to raise a fund this big, you need to be well-known. You need to have quite a reputation as a great investor, and you need to have earned the trust of investors over many years.
And the data you show in your Wall Street Journal stories shows that over the past 12 years, the returns on these mega funds are largely in line with the S&P 500. So I guess that's the rub here, is that they're in line, but the large size of these funds not necessarily putting out large returns.
Right. Well, I mean, if you think about it, with a private equity firm, you're investing a lot of money into a fund and you're paying fees for that and you're locking your money up for at least 10 years, usually. You might get some distributions along the way, but you're committing to lock your money up for a while. So in exchange for that, you expect to get returns that are higher than the public markets because you're saying, I'm willing to let my money go for 10 years. Whereas in the public markets, you have daily liquidity. You could always tap the markets to get your money out. So people expect that private equity will deliver higher returns, and historically it has. But with these mega funds, which are relatively new, they haven't.
And they also have less places to then turn around and invest the money when it's a fund that large.
Part of the reason that mega funds kind of struggle to beat the public market that we look at in the story is they have to go and spend that money on large acquisitions. Because when you have so much money that you've raised, you got to spend a lot at once because you work on these deals. You know, you spend a lot of time working on a deal. So you need to be putting a lot of capital to work each time you make an investment. So that means you have to be buying large companies, which are harder to improve. It's like turning around an ocean liner versus turning around a little dinghy. Mm-hmm. You know, with as an investor in smaller companies, it's a lot easier to do things that will affect the strategy and overall performance of a company than with a big company.
And these mega fund managers seem to respond by saying, our big returns actually will come during market downturns.
Yeah, that's a common refrain. They say, well, this isn't really a good time to see what we can do. You know, a bull market, a 10-year bull market is not our time to shine. It's really during market downturns when we become, you know, the most adept. And we'll see, that could happen. And, you know, in the past it has happened, but during the last market downturn, they didn't have $10 billion plus funds. Uh-huh. So we don't know. They haven't really put it to the test.
But for the funds that are investing here, even though you have returns held in check a bit, that low interest rate environment we're in and the possibility of the Fed lowering rates again sometime this summer or perhaps in the fall makes this a very attractive place to put money.
That's right. And that's why these funds continue to be able to raise huge sums of money, even though they're not really giving you much edge over public markets. They are safer than public markets. They're less risky. That's one thing we go into in the story. So I think people say, well, where else am I going to put my money? Where else could I possibly get returns that could beat the market?
So there's some peace of mind here?
There's definitely some peace of mind. There's what some people call you don't get fired for buying IBM mentality,
yes.
Which is like, I don't get fired for investing in Blackstone's latest fund because they're kind of a blue chip name. Mm-hmm. And I know that they're not going to, you know, destroy, you know, a lot of wealth for me.
All right. Well, check out Miriam Gottfried's story on WSJ.com and the WSJ app. Miriam, thanks for coming on the show.
It's my pleasure.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen in New York for The Wall Street Journal.